It is week 9 of the year 2021, and you're listening to Father Roderick to the Max. Welcome back to another episode of Father Roderick to the Max, a show for my supporters. And you are one of them. Otherwise, you wouldn't be listening to this. I'm sitting here on a beautiful, another beautiful day. Tomorrow, the weather is going to change from what I've heard. It's going to get colder, and there's going to be rain. And basically, the meteorologists say, a tongue breaker, that the weather actually will return to what's normal for this time of year in the Netherlands. And you kind of almost forget about what's normal because we've had such extraordinary springtime weather. But I'm sitting here outside. It is really springtime-like. I'm sitting here with a glass filled with my green smoothies. This is my first green smoothie of the year. And it's so good. What I normally do is I freeze in my bananas. So bananas are always a bit tricky. You know, you buy them when they're still a bit green, they're not fully ripened yet. You leave them on the table, but then the problem is they all are ready for consumption right away. So if you buy like 6 or 7, there's no way that I can eat bananas, you know, 7 bananas in 2 days. And so usually I end up with like 3 or 4 that are turning brown already, and you have to act quickly. What I normally do is I cut them up in pieces. I put them in plastic, you know, like these Tupperware boxes, and I put them in the freezer to use them in smoothies, because you can't really unfreeze a banana and eat it like a regular one. But it's perfectly fine to put them in the smoothie, and it has the added advantage of it cools down your smoothie, so you don't need to use extra ice, which will kind of water up the taste. And then I just add some yogurt. In this case, I had a few pears that were almost turning brown, an apple, and what else did I put in? I think that's, and then of course spinach, fresh washed spinach, to, you know, give it this green color, and at the same time add you know, all the good stuff from green spinach. Yeah, it's my first podcast of the day, so I apologize. Anyway. Let's talk about health.
Just look at the x-rays. You see that dark spot there? Whiplash.
Whiplash? Oh no.
And this smudge here that looks like my fingerprint? No, that's trauma.
I really try to find my balance back, both food-wise, so really focusing on healthy food and on calorie control, but also the whole balance of my week, work, leisure, prayer, all that stuff. And that's even more important now that I'm actually working under high pressure in order to film all my TV shows before I have to move. As you can imagine, the moment I need to start packing and I need to bring my stuff either to storage or to my new home, that's going to leave me at least for 2 or 3 weeks without the ability to do any type of work except for podcasting, because, well, you only need a digital recorder. Worst case scenario, I'll just do 3 walk-like episodes. So I usually record my episodes of The Walk just with a mobile mobile recorder, whereas these shows are produced with the Rodecaster. But if it's necessary, I can also just talk about the same topics while recording it outside. So, but editing, etc., you need a desk, you need the equipment, the audio, the monitor, the heavy PC. So none of that is going to happen in the weeks to come. So in order to prepare for that, I'm filming at least 2 or 3 episodes per week now, which leaves me with just not much time for all the rest. And one of the things that I'm doing today, I'm recording this on Wednesday, and Wednesday in my calendar is marked as recovery day. This is the kind of the schedule that I came up with after talking to the occupational therapist who helped me with reorganizing my work and rest and leisure in a more balanced way. And then I just took all her advice and came up with this division of the various moments during the week, where on Monday and Tuesday I will be mainly focusing on editing. Wednesday is really a day on which I'm not supposed to do anything too strenuous, and also to take ample time to put my mind to other things. So that's always one of the things that I kind of disregarded, is that it's not enough to just rest. Finding balance is not just about getting enough sleep or physical exercise, but it's also about resting your mind, literally do something that has nothing to do with work, nothing to do with the priestly occupations. I need to cough. Hold on. This is not COVID, of course, but I think I picked up something of a cold, maybe because I've been outside so much lately. But anyway, so it's important to also just put your mind to, and it could be reading, can be watching TV, playing video games, cooking, but just anything that is not work related. And according to both therapists, that is vital for the entire system to calm down and to step into a new rhythm that is going to be much more beneficial in the long run. So today, I'm just chatting with you, and then I'm going to play a little bit of Valheim, the Viking game. It's one of the most relaxing things that I can imagine. Just building house after house. I'm learning so much about architecture just by building houses. The thing is, it has an entire physical built-in system. I don't know how they did it, but if you start building a house, you can't just do whatever you want. It needs to be solid. And so every time you put a beam, it shows you a color. Like, yeah, this is green, so this is solid. It rests on something else. So it calculates actually the overall solidity of your construction. But when it turns orange, you really have to be careful. If it's red, it will probably collapse very quickly. So I've had some of my early houses collapse because I was going for the aesthetics instead of for what, you know, is architecturally works well. And now I'm trying to find a good balance, because then my next house was, I'm going to make everything is going to be super solidly constructed. But then I ended up with a living room full of wooden beams, and I couldn't barely walk without bumping into pillars. So now I'm trying to figure out techniques to make arches so that I can create a bigger hall, and at the same time, it's solid, but it also gives me some open space. And that is just physics. And by building it yourself, you get a feel for what you can do and what you can't do. I love it. It's like a puzzle. So anyway, I'm going to do a little bit of that, and then I'm going to cook myself a nice meal, and that'll be my day. And the temptation, of course, is when I have an open day, is to still do work. And there's always something in my inbox or like something extra I need to do. And I also have to communicate to the people around me. You know, Wednesday is my day of rest. And I'm just, whatever you send me, make sure I have it on Monday. Like today, I got a request from someone I work with. And it's like, hey, here are some texts. Can you please record this as voiceovers and send it to me before tomorrow? And actually, I'm thinking, no. I should not do it. Well, I am going to do it because there's a deadline. But this is, I really have to communicate this. Don't do this next time, because I cannot, on Wednesday I don't work. So if this arrives in my mailbox in the morning, normally I wouldn't even see it. Anyway, we'll see. Sometimes I'm a little bit too kind, I think. I'm not protecting myself and my agenda enough. Something else that's been happening, which is great, and at the same time also adds a little bit more stress to my weekly schedule, is remember I have to move. I found a location that can be renovated so that I can live there. The thing is, it will probably take a few months because a lot needs to be done. Now I'm in talks. I've been in talks with these people there for about 3 weeks now. And they've really put the pedal to the metal, and they're doing everything they can to work as fast as they can on plans on how are we going to renovate this? How can we keep costs under control? When can this be ready? But with that solution, which was really nice, I still would have to probably stay with friends or family for about 2 or 3 months. Most optimistic schedule would say 2 months, but I know this kind of stuff easily takes up more weeks. So I was prepared to try to find a solution for the next 3 months. So that's April, May, and June. So I would, earliest I was counting on having a new home was in July. Now that is, of course, if I have to wait, sure, I'll do that. And I was very happy that I found, at least that I found a home, which is not obvious in this time where everybody is looking for, you know, places to stay, for houses. The housing market is booming. And of course, I've got a very limited budget as a priest. So, but anyway, I was totally prepared to do that. We were in talks and, well, had to make a lot of micro decisions because the electricity was also really needed to be updated. So where, what are we going to install? And anyway, lots and lots of questions every day. Then all of a sudden yesterday, I got a phone call from a friend of mine who I'd approached previously asking, you know, do you know a place for where I could rent an apartment? And we went over some possibilities and basically turned out nothing of that. None of these options are available. There was one home that was maybe the best, but then there was someone in there, and we didn't know when that person would. It was clear that that person at one point would go to another home, and then the apartment would become available. But that could easily take another year. But then yesterday I got this phone call like, hey, that person is actually going to move and the apartment will be available. Would you like to take a look? Yeah, of course. But then at the same time, I'm already in talks with the other location and people are so warm and enthusiastic there. It almost feels like I'm betraying them. But this was such a good second option. So I have to take a look. I need at least explore it. And so I talked to the board of Tridio and they agreed with me, you know, just take a look there ask the right questions, make sure that it feels good. You know, you have to live there for at least a considerable amount of time. So we want you to have a good home where you're happy. So that's your priority. So I went there yesterday in the afternoon already, looked around, and I have to say I was very enamored with the place. The location in the country is really great. There are some other advantages that I won't talk. I can't really talk about, you know, what place it is, of course, because these talks are still confidential, and we've got a lot of people listening to these podcasts. But it looks good. There's tons of advantages. The biggest advantages is biggest advantage is these people are going to move out in the weeks to come, so when I have to leave this rectory, I can bring my stuff, my furniture, to the new home, even though they may not be completely out of the house yet. But they told me, we're totally fine. Just put it in some rooms here. But you don't have to put it in storage. That's really not necessary. We will make some room so you can already move in your stuff. I can stay with someone else for the remainder of the time that they are in the house. And then I can start living there. So the only thing that is kind of similar to the previous apartment is that it is in a, you know, not the best state. It's clearly not, it has not been renovated for, I would say, at least 60 years. I'm not kidding you. Like, a lot of the furniture and the what's on the floors, it still looks like what was there when the house was built. I mean, it's clean, but it is so outdated. I mean, the kitchen looks like an episode of WandaVision. And of course, you can say, well, that's very trendy now, but it's also not very useful. There is no oven. There is no, I was looking forward to cooking with induction, etc. None of that is available there. It's really, really old. So, and then the same is true for the shower and the toilet. I mean, that looks like straight from halfway in the past century. It's yeah. I mean, it works, it's functional, but it's really not up to date. So, but anyway, what I'm now proposing is that I just move there if it's possible, and if, of course, I can afford it, because I don't know that yet. They still have to make me an offer, but I hope it's an offer I can't refuse. And then I could move in. I don't have that hassle of putting all my stuff in storage and basically being paralyzed work-wise for 3 months. But I could immediately continue. And then once I'm there, I can just put my stuff in the best rooms and then work with volunteers and with some people that I know to kind of bring everything up to date. Because that will probably still take, I would say, at least half a year to get the house to the point where, you know, it would be kind of what a normal apartment should be like in terms of renovation. But, you know, on the other hand, that's a cool project. It's something that that is doable. But it is so, like, a totally different option all of a sudden. And the risk is that I completely lose myself in, you know, making arrangements, and I'm working extra hard for the TV show, doing all my podcasting work, etc., and then not taking enough time to take a break. And that's why a day like today, like a recovery day, is it's pretty vital that I keep myself to it. And maybe I should even add some extra time during the weekend. Because the weekends, I noticed this on last Monday. So I had, of course, the International Mass on Sunday. And then on Monday, I had to go to the north of the country in order to get there early, because that is at least a two-hour drive by car. Over pretty busy weeks, roadways, I should say, roads. So it's just your usual morning traffic, which is not very relaxing to drive in. I had to wake up at 6 and I came back home in like at 8:30 in the evening. Hadn't eaten anything during the day. Still had to cook dinner. I was completely exhausted yesterday. And then immediately I had to kind of start working on this new alternative or this second option for moving. So today I feel like my entire body is like, give me a break, really, I need it. So hence the green smoothie. And speaking of which, let's dive into the kitchen. We're halfway there anyway. Right, I promise that you don't have to yell gado gado at your phone this time. Like in the last episode, I was talking about this Indonesian, you know, cooked veggies with peanut sauce, and I just couldn't remember the name. And it happens to me quite a bit. I think it is still related to, I can't really blame COVID anymore, but people say, sometimes you have this COVID brain where you can't remember even simple words. I think I've had the COVID brain for years. And if you're a longtime listener, you know that I often have these moments where I'm trying to come up with the name of an actor and it just doesn't, it's not there. And I actually know why that is. Because then my brain has to, like a computer, has to always divide its processing power and among various tasks. And the faster the computer, of course, the more it can multitask. But you also know that when you're doing something that's very processor intensive, like rendering a video in 4K or whatever, your computer needs all its energy for that task. And if you then open your browser and you go look up a page or something like that, everything slows down to a crawl. And it's because your computer is just putting all its energy on its most important task. And I think when I'm podcasting, that is what happens. So, of course, I also have like this huge archive in my brain of names and anecdotes and situations. And then, of course, I'm still not talking in my native language when I'm doing my podcast. So there's also subconsciously this translation process going on. Not really translation, but there is still like if you don't use your native tongue, it is just more demanding than if I just would be able to speak Dutch with you, but I'm not going to. So And when I'm podcasting, that is actually super high processor intense because I'm telling a story. I'm constantly thinking, you know, what's the next topic that I'm going to talk about? How I'm also not really very prepared, so I don't have reading notes, which makes it even harder to make sure that this is interesting to listen to. And sometimes, you know, maybe it isn't, because I kind of lose track of my thoughts and I go into these rabbit holes and whatnot. But anyway, so recording a podcast, because I don't have a script and I still want to deliver, I notice that all my brain power goes into the communicating with you. And then when I suddenly stop that process and I say, hey, I need that name from that actor or this Indonesian dish, what was it called? It's like my computer, you get just a spinning beach ball. That's what happens. And then I'm like, yeah, I need to outsource this to the chat room because my brain is currently overloading. But it's also a bit, you know, like, oh, come on, why couldn't I come up with that name? It's so obvious. So weird how oftentimes our bodies are very much like machines. And it's always a little bit weird if you're not fully in control of all these processes. But I think there is an explanation. Anyway, we were talking about cooking and food. Well, the fact that I'm looking at this old kitchen in this apartment that I may rent in the future, I was a bit torn because I kind of like the vintage style, but I would never choose to build a kitchen like that. So I had to apply this idea, like, if you would build your own kitchen, would you build it in this style or not? And I'm thinking, no, it's too old. This is really made in a time that cooking was, especially in the Netherlands, still a bit of a necessary evil. The Dutch have not been known for extraordinary culinary things. Nowadays, it's a lot better, but it was more comparable to other northern countries where food is mostly functional. And so there is no equipment there. There's no oven. There was a bit of a gas fueled cooking station, but it looked, the one that I have downstairs here is driving me nuts because it's not stable. So it's gas. And then on it, you have these, metal, like every source, every heating source has this metal thing around it. But then when you put a pan on it, the pan itself is not sitting comfortably. So it can move. And so the other day I was cooking an omelette for breakfast, and I put in all the ingredients, and I left it on the stove. I turn around to make my coffee, and then all of a sudden I hear this bang. The pan is on the floor, the omelette is all over the kitchen floor, and I'm like, oh, come on. And the floor was not clean enough to pick it up and cook it again, which was something that I was considering, like, maybe if I heat it, I can still salvage this. And I'm like, no. The other day, you just walked into this kitchen coming from outdoors. And then last week we had the snow and everything, so the kitchen was really not clean. And I'm also, because I'm going to move in a few weeks anyway, I'm really not in the mood for keeping the kitchen clean. Anyway, for my next kitchen, that's why I ordered this induction plate, because I learned to cook with induction in Ireland last year. Was it the year before? Oh gosh, no, last year I didn't go on vacation because of COVID. Ay, ay, ay. So 2 years ago, I was in Ireland for my summer holiday, and that cottage had an induction plate, which I'd never cooked with before, but I was totally in love with that system because it's so fast. It heats up much faster. I thought it was like electrical cooking where it needs to heat up and then it remains hot for a long time. But no, induction is like right away it starts cooking. It's really, really great. Plus, what I appreciated about the whole thing, and of course we stayed there for 2 weeks, is how easy it is to clean. You put the pans in the cupboards, and then you just have this glass surface. And so, super easy to clean. Whereas this old-fashioned cooking station that I currently have, it's a pain to clean because it gets in everywhere because it's not flat. Like even the metal and the holders for the gas pits and what, I don't know what it's called in English, but anyway, yeah, it's almost impossible to clean. So I think I'm going for it. for the IKEA kitchen. We'll still, again, we'll have to see if what we can salvage from the design, because the kitchen was designed for a totally different room. For we were actually already working on installing it here in the rectory, and it would be this kitchen with a kitchen island. So the induction plate would be in the middle of the room, and this particular room here on the first floor was big enough. We made all the calculations. And so under the cooking plate would be the oven, which is another thing that I haven't had for 5 years. I'm so looking forward to be able to, you know, cook pastry again, and or maybe a rotisserie chicken or anything. I can't do any of that. So my inner hobbit is really looking forward to the moment that we can make pie again. But both apartments that I'm looking at now have much smaller spaces for the kitchen. So the design that I made is not salvageable. And I'm a bit frustrated because I had this big kitchen top that was made on demand. So it has it's a pretty big space, because I wanted to have something that I could also use for YouTube videos. You know, people love it when I post my recipes. I was like, this is the perfect design. I looked at a lot of cooking shows, and like, how do they design their kitchen? Well, in a lot of regular homes, the place where you prepare the food is against the wall, which is, of course, a very logical place. For filming, that's a disaster, because you can't really film it from the other side. So you're constantly either seeing someone from the back, or you have to put a camera on top of the hanging above your pans. But then, of course, you get all the heat and the smoke and whatnot, so that doesn't really work. So I thought I had the perfect design for both, you know, being able to cook, and the table is extra big, so I could sit at it on the other side and use it also to eat my breakfast. And I think, and it was pretty costly at IKEA. They charge you like a special prize if you want to have these bigger, made on design, or these design tabletops. So I'm a bit frustrated that even in the other apartment, there's probably no room for that either. But anyway, a lot of the other stuff of the kitchen, including the equipment, is all standard stuff. So we can move that around and make a new design. But that's what I'm really looking forward to when I have my kitchen, like a new kitchen, induction cooking, and an oven. And I'm pretty sure that will give me a lot of new inspiration for this kitchen segment. All right, so no recipes today. I apologize. Well, you had my recipe for a green smoothie, right? So delicious, a green smoothie. What I learned this week on the internet. Again, TikTok to the rescue. This is, I heard that YouTube is actually working on a TikTok competitor called YouTube Shorts. And it's like most of these companies do, just a copy of TikTok. They're heavily promoting it, but of course it's vertical video versus normally on YouTube horizontal video. I don't know. TikTok is a one-purpose program, so it's much easier to just scroll around and discover stuff. But maybe over time Google will win it. But for now, I still prefer TikTok. I came across this series of videos with tips for Premiere Pro users. Now, you know that I used to be editing with Avid, and then I switched to Adobe, to the Adobe Cloud Suite. And I never want to go back. We have a special rate. We get a special rate as a nonprofit, which is still, you know, quite a bit of money every month. But I use it for everything I do, for podcasting, audio, auditions, one of the best audio programs, if not the best audio program that I've ever worked with. It's got Photoshop, it's got Premiere Pro, it's got Adobe After Effects, it's got DTP programs. There's even a whole part of that suite that I've never tried out. It's a great deal. And so I use Premiere Pro for my videos, and the disadvantage of being kind of new to a program is that you don't know the shortcuts. In Avid, it took me years to master the keystrokes, and that almost becomes mechanical memory, where you can fast forward, do all sorts of stuff just with the keyboard, which saves you a lot of moving around with the mouse, which is comfortable, but also much slower than using keys. So I came across this whole series of videos with tips on, you know, how to work faster in Premiere Pro with all these keystrokes, which they don't list anywhere. You have to know that it exists. And I've already learned a couple of tricks in just 5 minutes. I was like, wow, this is going to revolutionize my editing process. For instance, there was a tool that is normally hidden in Premiere Pro, but you activate it pressing R, and it creates, it gives you the option for a cursor that you can use then to extend video clips. But the cool thing is, if you make, for instance, you have a clip of, let's say, a squirrel on a bike, and you need that to cover this other interview that you do with the other squirrel, but you don't want to have talking squirrel heads all the time. So you think, well, maybe he's talking about biking, so I'm just going to use that clip of that squirrel on a bike to switch to. But the interview is a bit long, so this clip is too short because he ran his bike into a tree, and then he got hospitalized and everything. But I just want to have this 20-second clip of the squirrel on a bike. But I wish it was 30 seconds. Well, you then just press R, you take the cursor, and then you extend the video clip to the 30-second mark. It's totally intuitive, and it will slow down the video a little bit so that it covers 30 seconds. You can do the opposite as well and condense the clip, and it will accelerate it. But this is, of course, much easier to get a perfect fit than typing in the, you know, I want 1.5 times faster, or in Adobe, I think you have to do a percentage. And I'm oftentimes just trying out like, okay, 80%. No, it's still too long. 75%. And that was too short. 76%. You know, like, that takes minutes, whereas this is just like I grab the side of the clip and boom, it's and you know what would be interesting, and I haven't tried that out yet, if this would work with audio as well. So oftentimes I put in background stuff, like when I'm filming. This is kind of a little bit behind the scenes for that I would normally share also in this show anyway. But for instance, when I filmed outside and I'm walking with someone through the neighborhood or whatever, oftentimes I can't really use the audio that I've recorded on the spot because there may be traffic behind the camera. There may be someone, I don't know, using a leaf blower or a truck going backwards and doing the beep, 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 beep. That has happened so many times. You can't really wait for the audio, the outside audio, to be perfect to start filming. Because then, you know, like the other day, I was filming in the neighborhood of, in the vicinity, I should say, of Schiphol Airport. So every 3 minutes, there was an airplane flying over. That audio is unsalvageable. So what you do is I just use stock audio of birds and like outdoor sounds, and I layer that under, you know, on all the audio tracks, and it creates continuity as well, because oftentimes, like, you change camera positions, and then of course the microphone on the camera also changes position, and it's very, all of a sudden you've got this jump in audio volume and type of background by using these layers of canned sound effects. And of course it it's imperceptible if you don't know that's what we do. You don't realize that, but every movie does that. Have you ever considered that most of the movies that you see, like Star Wars, There's almost no real audio in Star Wars. Everything has been dubbed. So there's this one scene, I think, with Aunt Beru, where you can tell this is probably what they recorded on location in Tunisia. But then later on, with the in the editing process, George Lucas changed the voice actor for Aunt Beru. So the voice that you hear is not the voice of the original actor. And I think they at one point they brought it back to the original sound or something like that. But anyway, it's just amazing to know that when you see like the scene in the cantina in Star Wars, in New Hope, you hear the music in the background, you hear the customers talking, etc. None of that sound is there on location. It's all been added afterwards. R2-D2. There is no sound coming out of R2-D2. Those robots cannot speak. It's Bert afterwards, Ben Bert, who created on a synthesizer all these beeps from R2-D2. So anyway, we do the same thing for television as well. Long story short, or short story long, it would be really nice if I have this background audio to be able to stretch it just a little bit, because oftentimes you just have these background sounds, but you want it to last a little bit longer. And then, of course, you could loop the audio, but that's what you are hearing. When you loop it, you have this one bird, and choop, 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 and then you get the loop, and then choop, choop. Your brain notices, this. I've heard this sound before. So with stretching it a little bit, I think it's much more imperceptible. Anyway, so that's what I learned this week on the internet. And there's one final thing that I wanted to just play for you, because this is also TikTok. One of the coolest videos or coolest abilities that TikTok built in is the ability to duet. So someone will record a riff on a guitar or on a bass guitar, and then you can use that video and start playing your own instrument over it. And then someone else can start singing or composing a song or whatever, or a poem, and then add that to the mix. And so sometimes you have these videos. They did this with the shanties, the sea shanties, which was this all the rage all of a sudden. And most of those videos on TikTok consist of like at least 10 people singing with each other. And they had no idea while they were recording their part that someone else would take that recording and then add to it. It is amazing. Well, I just found the most hilarious video ever. This is a duet with a cat. I hope it plays. I included a TikTok link in my show notes. So this was a video of a cat. And what cats sometimes do is they put their paws on a piano. But it's like, boing, boing, boing. And the cat is just like, why is this making noise? I want to destroy stuff. So they took that video with a cat. And it's just some random notes. And then people started to add music to it. And then all of a sudden, you get, let me see, undo this. I hope this plays. Let me check if this is connected to the road. Yeah, let me put it up. So this started off with just a cat doing bling, 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 bling. This is what it ended up with. Isn't it amazing? So I couldn't believe it. You see the cat playing the piano. You hear the piano sounds, and you can tell. You can verify it's really the notes that the cat plays. And then you've got all these musicians that start to create this song. And then the most hilarious part of this video, and again, the link is in the show notes, so you can see it for yourself, is the cat is looking at the camera. And he's like relaxing, like, boing, boing, like, oh, I'm just chilling out here with these great musicians. And it's just this combination of the cat completely unaware that it's like the most amazing TikTok song that goes viral. The cat doesn't know. It's insane. I'm gonna play this again. It's too good. awesome. Anyway, thanks, TikTok. That makes my day.
I'm quite keen on comic books, especially the ones about superheroes. I find the whole mythology surrounding superheroes fascinating.
You ever try these comics?
No.
You know something?
No, what?
You read too many comic books.
I'm very glad I have these jingles because then I can refill my green smoothie while you're listening to the audio. So it's time to talk about superheroes. The Snyder Cut is going to be there any minute now. What I heard, this is of course the kind of re-edit of the Justice League movie. I heard that one of the reasons this was made and that they could make this for HBO is that Schneider actually didn't get paid for it. He offered to do this edit for free. Because he knew that if he would just ask for more money, of course they already hired him, and then because of that tragic event in his own life where his daughter died, he had to step out. But he probably had a contract where they had to pay him anyway, just like what they did for Johnny Depp in Fantastic Beasts 3. They gave him a contract that even if for whatever reason he could not film his role, he would still get paid the full amount. So he gets millions for a movie in which he will not appear because they've replaced his character with Matt Mikkelsen. I think they did, right? Isn't he? Let me just double check that before I say something stupid. So this was Fantastic Beasts. Mads Mikkelsen. So I can imagine that for the re-edit for the Snyder Cut, they said, yeah, but we're going to have to pay him again. We're not going to do that. So he really wanted to, and I can understand you've worked for years on preparing that movie and you put your heart and soul in it. It's art. You really want to see the end result. And so he's like, hey, I'm just going to do this for free. And it still has cost a lot of money, but at least it is, he can finish something. And I applaud that. I hate it when projects are never finished, like series on Netflix or Prime Video that are canceled after the first season. It's like, oh, I was so hoping to see how this would end, and now we'll never see it. Mads Mikkelsen, by the way, also played, of course, in Star Wars Rogue One. He's Galen Erso. So it's very cool to have a Star Wars actor now also involved in the world of Harry Potter. But that's not nor here or there. Why was I bringing this up? Now I'm getting confused. Wait, I totally lost my train of thought. What was I talking about? Oh, superhero movies. Yes, the Snyder Cut. So he doesn't get paid. Plus, but what he did, and this is smart, according to rumors, the movie ends on a huge cliffhanger. And only he knows how to pick up the story after Justice League won. So I'm thinking this is his way of still making sure he will get paid in the end by giving the fans what they want. They really have lobbied so hard to see this cut, but then it will keep them wanting more. And so he's leveraging the enthusiasm around his cut of the movie by whetting their appetite for a sequel. And if this Snyder Cut delivers and the pandemic is under control, you know, he may actually have another job and make some more money. So I'm very curious to see, because of course with DC, like I said last week, they're on a crossroad. They can either go with this dark approach, or they can move more towards, you know, Shazam and more optimistic Wonder Woman stuff. But also Wonder Woman, even though it gets a sequel, Wonder Woman 2, I don't think that it performed the way they hoped it would perform. And that's not just because of the pandemic. As you heard, I'm not very enthusiastic about the second Wonder Woman movie. So maybe they'll revert back to what really made them a lot of money, and that was the whole Dark Knight approach. We'll see. We'll have to wait and see. I personally, even though I don't really like that dark approach, I still respect what they tried to do with Justice League. And I feel that now that they finally brought all these superheroes together, we need to see a little bit more of that before they take another direction. It's like the Avengers. This is nothing like the Avengers in a way, because I think that Marvel did this with so much more care and quality, what they did with all these superhero movies. It was such a coherent story. DC has been unable, I think, to deliver on that point, but still, they were on their way. And I can totally see another Justice League movie or something that continues this story. Maybe they will just add and subtract some more superheroes. I can still see how that would give them a little bit more back on their investment in this direction, in this storyline. But only time will tell. Many churches are still using streaming solutions to reach their parishioners, just like I do on Sunday, to help those that are unable to go to their local churches to still take a moment during that Sunday to hear the readings and to hear a homily and to have some time to pray together. Even though, of course, we're separated sometimes by oceans, it still brings together a community, and I'm particularly struck by how beneficial that has been for both for me as a priest and also for the people that are part of that community. Now, we're still in the early days, I think, of this revolution, because that's kind of what it is. Televising the liturgy is nothing new. Church has been doing that since the 60s. But what is new is that you can do it locally, and you can do it high quality, and every congregation can probably afford reaching their own faithful this way. So that, in that sense, it is a revolution. I think it's here to stay. I don't think it can and should replace live liturgy, but it has enabled me, at least, to have this feeling of this global church, and so it's this international aspect. And still, you can make it super personal. That's what I love. I'm just like, before I say mention the intentions, I go to Discord and to the comments, and I read what people are posting. Like, can you please pray for my mom? Can you pray for a friend of mine? And then I can speak directly about these very specific prayer requests, even though they were made by people that I've never met in real life. And it feels so personal and so close, even more personal sometimes than in, you know, regular parish life. And maybe that's because it's digital, because it's another generation that we're reaching this way. But it's an openness, an intimacy that I have not experienced that much in let's say, old-fashioned parish life. Now, there, since the church has been using televised liturgy for a long time, there have also been guidelines, both from the Vatican and local guidelines. And the other day I found an article or some instructions that were stipulated by the National Conference of Catholic Bishops in 1996. So for me, that still sounds like the present day. It's not so long ago. But when you read through it, you think, whoa, things have changed so much. A lot of the suggestions that they make and rules that they stipulate are still applicable to what we do with streaming, but then it's so much easier now. It's incredible. But anyway, what struck, so this I'm not sure, does it have a title? I think it's just Guidelines for Televising the Liturgy. I'll include a link in the show notes if you're interested. So it starts with an overall introduction. It refers to, of course, the official Roman documents on the liturgy, and it quotes something that the Constitution on the Sacred Liturgy states. Radio and television broadcasts, there's no mention of the internet, radio and television broadcasts of sacred rites must be marked by discretion and dignity under the leadership and direction of a competent person appointed for this office by the bishops. This is especially important when the service to be broadcast is the Mass. So that is unimaginable nowadays, that the bishops would appoint someone who oversees the way the parishes are streaming. Like, everybody's just inventing the wheel, and the bishops are usually behind the times, at least in situations that I am familiar with. Like, they're the last people to know how to do this. So local parishioners are usually much more knowledgeable about how to use these modern media. I love this whole list of principles where they say, you know, the first thing you need, it's not about equipment. It's not about the how. The technical how of the enterprise, but this is about the quality of the liturgy. The first thing you need is a beautiful, good liturgy that makes sense. So they say, and this is still very, very relevant, and it's something that we have absolutely tried to apply for our international masses here in the town where I'm currently streaming from. And with Hank and Inge, we've really been thinking this through, and we said we really want this to be quality liturgy. And so we're going to train our acolytes. We're going to make sure that the entire liturgical space makes sense. And the starting situation was not very, very good. Like in most parishes, people get used to the way their church looks, but then when you look at it from the camera, what does the camera see? All of a sudden, we saw so many defects. And so we completely rearranged the liturgical space in the span of a month. And it's so much better now. So much better. And that's the fruit of streaming. So anyway, the principles that are still valid is give careful attention to the modes of Christ's presence in the liturgy. So you've got the Word, liturgy of the Word, the Eucharistic bread and wine, the assembly, the priest. These are all ways in which Christ is present in our midst. And so every aspect of the liturgy should be also something that the people that are watching it can experience. The thing that is difficult is, of course, the assembly, because for a long time we weren't able to have an assembly in the church. We just had the participants. So one thing that we told our acolytes is, make sure you pray with us and give the answers. Don't just sit there and wake up when it's your turn to do something, but you are representing the assembly right now. And I think that really helped. Of course, it stipulates here, you have to follow the directives of the general instruction of the Roman Missal. You would be surprised how many churches are not following or have never read those general instructions. And when I first came to work here in the parishes, I had to do so much course correction, and it was just in every location, stuff was wrong liturgically, and it's just old habits. Oftentimes, it was my predecessors, other priests, that came up with their own rules and their own, you know, what they wanted, and I had to really explain, well, the liturgy of the Catholic Church is universal, so it means that wherever you go on the planet, if it's the Roman Catholic Rite, you're gonna feel at home. So all these homemade, you know, local things, that's not what the Catholic liturgy is about. This is not about personal preferences or self-expression of the congregation. We are participating in the liturgy of the universal church. So it's a different approach. Took me quite a few years to kind of correct that and teach people that is important. Now, of course, with streaming, obviously, you want to make sure that the liturgy follows the rules, because this is literally reaching a worldwide global audience, and you want everyone to recognize the liturgy that we celebrate here in the Netherlands. And it's not just about the language. It's also about the visual aspects of the liturgy. And I think that we did a good job. I'm proud of what we did. And from the feedback, we hear that that is actually what is helping a lot of people to connect with what we do, because they feel at home. It's just like in their local church. You also have to make sure that there is full, conscious, and active participation of the faithful. Well, again, not many faithful, not many people in the church for a long time. The integrity of the liturgical year. So this is not about creating your own themed liturgies. No, you follow the liturgical year of the rest of the church. The homily is important. And what is stated here specifically, you have to take into account also those who watch on television. I have a lot of colleagues that never, ever look at the camera. And that's one of the first things that I have done is like, I know where the camera is. When I speak to the congregation, I look in the direction of the camera because that is where you are. And I need to make eye contact. Otherwise, you feel like you're just a spectator. But you're a participant, even though you're watching this on the internet. And so eye contact, I also do that when I preach. That's why I never write down my homily. I want to be able to look people in the eye. This is a relationship, not just information transfer. Then you have to use appropriate, you have to use trained liturgical ministers. So that's what we did. We found new sacristans. We formed new acolytes. By the way, all that, now that I have to move, I will have to start again, which is a shame. Well, of course, the people that are involved can also continue to help the local community. But I am personally sad that we invested so much in training all these people for the streaming masses, and now I can't take them with me. You have to use live liturgical music that fits the celebration. So this is a tricky one. It says live liturgical music. So no pre-taped music, which is kind of like, I'm so used to pressing a button and hear a jingle. Can't I just install a Rodecaster in the church and just press a button for, you know, some organ music or Gregorian chant? Here the American bishops insist that live music is what is needed. And I think it has to do with authenticity. Then a sense of noble simplicity. I like that too. Simplicity is key. Also because it's visual, and when it's visual, it needs to really be as clear as possible. Good use of liturgical space. That is why we completely rearranged everything on around the altar, because the way the whole thing was positioned in the past, it didn't work on camera. People were just sitting behind the altar. You couldn't see them. And if you just follow the general instruction of the Roman Missal and put everything where it should be, makes so much more sense. The only thing that we were unable to make work is the seat of the priest. So you open and you close the mass with a microphone at the seat. The altar was just, the altar space was too small. And then we had faulty microphones that were unreliable. So at one point we just used the lectern for the opening, but it's not ideal. I prefer, anyway, and maybe in the new situation I have more space. We'll see. Unhurried, reverent pace, very important. That's one of the reasons that I don't like to watch the mass that is televised on national TV here in the Netherlands, because they're so on the clock. It really has to, the mass has to fit within 60 minutes. And it's literally because after 60 minutes, the people in Hilversum press a button and then the next program will start. There is no margin whatsoever. So I've heard from colleagues that are, you know, on television for those masses. They say it's so demanding because you have to, they rehearse the entire mass beforehand. They do an exact copy of the mass, but then timed. So, and then they correct. So it's basically you celebrate mass once for training, fake mass, and then you do it for real. And there's constantly someone out of sight signaling to the priest and to the assistants, like, faster, stop, move to this, move to that. I couldn't do that. I don't like that. I want, you know, liturgy is alive. It's like a good conversation. You don't look at your watch when you're having a good conversation. It's like a confession. There's nothing worse than having to do a confession under time restraint, because you cannot hurry liturgy. An awareness of and visual contact with the viewing congregation. It's what I mentioned beforehand. You have to involve the people that are listening or watching in the congregation and make sure they feel welcome and that they feel that they are participants too. And then also a notification to the viewers when Mass is pre-recorded. Of course, it makes a difference if Mass is live or you're watching it with a delay. Now, the difficult thing with internet, of course, is that there's actually always a delay. Even when I'm Skyping or when I'm streaming my podcast live, I know this from having done this with video games, for instance, there sometimes is a delay of a minute. So you're always watching, and this is, of course, because video has to be compressed and it's sent to a place and then it's sent back to the user, so there's obviously going to be a delay. So it's never truly live. Even television is never truly live. There's always a bit of a delay. But of course, what they mean is, if you record the Mass, let's say 3 days in advance, people want to know, you know, like I thought I was watching a live thing, and then this is just canned liturgy. So I still am very much in favor of always, if possible, streaming live and or at least stream on the same day. But I don't think you should pre-record. Like, for instance, we have that question now with the Holy Week. Since I am moving before the start of Holy Week, what am I going to do? And the first thing we decided is that we're not going to pre-record anything. This is Holy Week. It needs to be authentic. You cannot record Easter on Good Friday. That doesn't make sense. Also, because of the participants in the liturgy and the assistants, for them, it's you know, happening right there and then. So yeah, I think it's not always possible for local churches to immediately transmit live. Oftentimes, also because the internet connection has to be really good. You have to have very reliable Wi-Fi. Especially if you're streaming in HD. So I know a lot of parishes where they will just record the Mass and then they will put it together. Sometimes they use various cameras, and so there's even some editing involved. But then at least they make sure that it is sent out on the same day, so you still have that immediacy of it's Sunday and, you know, with a little bit of time difference, but this is still happening today. But it's a bit fluid. Anyway, there's much more, but most of the other rules and regulations here in these recommendations are totally out of date. It's talking about old technology. It's incredible how much we can do nowadays compared to the 90s. Ah, great times we live in. And with that, I think it is time for me to wrap things up. Thank you so much for your support, for your ongoing support. I will keep you up to date. Also, on Discord, that's where I usually post news the first, you know, like things happening with the move or anything. That's also where we opened a section for, if you want to see me play video games with other members of our Patreon community. You hear me talk about the Viking game Valheim quite a bit, where we're building villages and try to survive in the Viking wilderness. If you ever want to see us live, then keep an eye on Discord, because almost every evening now we're building Viking villages with at least four or five people, and it's a ton of fun. So, and of course, if you are interested, you have the game and you want to join, you're more than welcome. Just let us know on the Discord server. Again, thanks for listening. Have a great day, and I will talk to you soon.